Welcome to the Lighter Side of the Dark Side. It's your weekly freak show here on Renegade Radio and all podcast catchers, Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, YouTube. It's the Dark Mark Show. I am Dark Mark, the goth comedian. And as always, everybody's favorite horror writer, Nicole Six. Have you never seen her before?
Hi. How's it going, everyone?
Well, if you're listening to us on audio, you're not seeing her at all. But let me describe. You have a some fresh new lipstick, courtesy of former guest and our friend Jessica, and pigtails that you're setting the internet on fire. I see it as we speak.
Oh, boy.
People are going nuts. They love those pigtails.
I love pigtails, too. Pigtails are fun.
Okay. I don't know if this guy's into pigtails, but I know he's into a lot of things, such as, and he, I got to tell you, Nicole, everybody asks me what my dream is as far as podcasting, doing comedy, acting, writing, all of that. And I tell people, I will know that I'm a success when I don't have to work a day job and I can support myself just doing my arts. And I think you've said something along the lines as well. This guy has done that his whole life. I can think of two people I've met, and that's him and Willie Tyler, the ventriloquist Willie Tyler and Lester. But this guy has been... He was on the convention. He was doing conventions before conventions were cool. He's been, he's done Beatles conventions. He's done Monkees conventions. He's done horror conventions. He's done the Transylvania tours, ghost tours. And now he has written a new book, his first actually, which is 100. I don't have the title in front of me, but let me see if I can remember it. The 100. The book of 100, the book of top, even when you have it in front of me, I can't even get it. The book of top 10 horror lists. This is also known as Cryptmaster Chucky, and we're going to talk about that. Charles Rosnay.
Hey there. Why aren't you going to describe me for your audio listeners as well? Because I'm wearing my pigtails and I got my lipstick on. I mean, you know, I feel a little left out of that.
Yes. Let me describe you. You're in front of a stand-in of Wolfman and Dracula from the Universal Monsters. You have very striking blonde hair and a little kind of a soul patchy goatee sort of thing, and you look good.
Okay, I'll take that.
you look good. You don't have pigtails, you don't have new lipstick, but you look good. And right. I've seen you in lipstick, and I've worn lipstick myself. We can't pull off the shade that Nicole's pulling off, but that's the way it goes.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show, guys, and thank you for the nice intro.
And once again, for the second week in a row, I have to thank Amber LeMay and Russell for putting this together. We were actually going to have you on at a later date, but next week's guest, Mischief the Clown, had to reschedule. So we slotted you in, and I'm glad because I'm very fascinated with you and your life and your book, and I'm looking forward to hearing about it. And I have to match that East Coast energy that you have. So what I'm doing right now is I'm going to pop open a Raise energy drink. We are sponsored by Raise. Say that again, Nicole.
I said, I wish I had one of those.
Oh, I should have dropped one off with you the other day when I got your cat. But this is the Galaxy Burst. And I think this is now your favorite flavor. It's very fruity. This is your favorite flavor?
I think maybe, yeah.
Because I know you like the Baja Lime, which is like Baja Blast.
I do like the Baja Lime, and I also like the Fruit Punch a lot. Voodoo.
It's just called Voodoo, but it's a Fruit Punch sort of thing. The best thing about Raise energy drinks, you can't get them in stores. You can't get them in 7-Elevens. I'm going to cover my face with this. You can get these at gyms or GNCs, or better yet, save. Use the code that is in the description of your podcast catcher or on YouTube, and get 15% off a case of Raise energy drinks. They just came out with a new flavor, lemon ice. And I can't wait to try
that.
Lemon Italian. Yeah. And I can't wait to try that. But here, I'm going to pop open the Galaxy Burst. And the best part about Raise, zero calories, zero carbs, zero.
And another thing, they all mix very well with vodka.
Yes, they do. I think I've only had this and the Baja Lime, but they do mix very well with vodka. And, you know, speaking of energy, you know, you want to have energy in the bedroom, don't you? I mean, you know, it's a society where we're encouraged to hustle harder, sleep less, and work more. So you may find it difficult to relax and be in the moments. Performance issues in the bedroom impact millions of men like you and me, but finally, there's a discreet tool that works. Meet Eddie, the smarter treatment solution for erectile dysfunction. Eddie is a clinically proven, easy-to-use wearable device designed to help men of any age strengthen and maintain their erections. Call 737-301-6111 to speak to a licensed nurse or visit eddiebygiddy.com and be the best version of yourself. And the best part, we have a coupon code for that as well. If you go to eddiebygiddy.com and you use our code darkmark20, you get 20% off any order. Get eddiebygiddy.com where I forgot their catchphrase, which is a good one. Where innovation meets ED. Where innovation meets ED, eddiebygiddy.com. I've seen reviews, and the reviews are positive. People say it's great. People say, because some people just use it one or two times. That's all they need. The blood flow is restored. Some people use it every time. Doesn't matter what age you are. You want to really wow your partner. So get eddiebygiddy.com. Now, Charles, I should segue into how you pleasure your partner, but I'm not going to. I was reading the reviews of your book, and they're all very positive. They love it. Everybody loves lists. I remember when I was a kid, I had the book of lists. This is going back, but it was like some old book, a book of lists. And I love reading the lists. And now, you know, online, it's all lists.
Yep. There are lists on every website.
You know, and the inspiration might have been Letterman, you know, because who didn't love his top 10 list? And I thought, you know, if we can do top 10 lists of something that I love and something that, the you know, is it just screams out genre. And it was a case of getting 100 celebrities to come up with their list. That was the tough part. Fortunately, I had about 80 of them from years ago when I used to do an online newsletter called National Horror Happenings. So when COVID hit, I had a little more time to do things. And I said, well, I'll get 20, 30 more. If I hit 100 celebrities, like you mentioned in the intro, 100 celebrities, that's enough to put together a phenomenal book. And put it together, did bios for all the guys, all the gals, all the people who gave me their lists, came up with a great photo to use. And then if there was a particular film that they chose, got a slick or a still or a promo from the film and incorporated it. And people are loving the book. It's so exciting.
And these aren't just like, you know, semi-celebrities like we get on our show. By the way, speaking of books, Nicole has her new poetry book out now.
I don't know if you can call me a celebrity, but
you wanted to give us your list?
Yeah, I wrote a list for you. Yes, of my top 10. I write horror professionally. So the first four are all Stephen King adaptations. The rest are just ones I personally like.
Charles, do you reverse order, like 10 to 1?
They're not in an order. I didn't order them. I kind of just sat there and thought about them. I think I like them all the same. Like if I had to like pick. So I'll just read them to you. I started with the Stephen King adaptations because I don't like every Stephen King adaptation, and Carrie was close to making the list, but I had other things I liked more than Carrie. So The Shining, The Stand, The Langoliers, even if it's cheesy, it really inspired me as a person. 1408, that's the Stephen King adaptations. Then Alien versus Predator, because I fucking love that movie.
Alien versus Predator?
Yeah. AVP.
Okay, no judgment, but okay, AVP, but not AVPR.
Some people make fun of me because I choose some cheesy movies sometimes, but I like them.
Hey, if you like it, great. I got to see that again. I saw it once, and
I loved this whole Chamber of Sacrifice and the whole mythology they came up with in it. It was great.
It was very cheesy. It's been a while.
And I like the badass chick who like goes on and like wins the respect of the predator and battles the queen. It's a great movie. Anyway,
Charles, did anybody pick Alien versus Predator on your list?
I was just looking. They picked, a ton of people picked Alien. One person picked Alien Covenant. One person picked Alien Resurrection. One person picked Alien 3. A bunch of people.
Who picked Alien Resurrection? Not making fun of them. It's just, it's usually the least liked.
I know. And then Aliens. But nobody picked Alien versus Predator. Nobody.
Well, there you go.
Well, people forget it did well enough. They came out with that really bad sequel.
AVPR.
Yeah.
And when you get to my picks are even more obscure and weird and maybe not even horror, but go ahead, Nicole.
All right. So number six is Return of the Living Dead.
Great. It's
such a good movie. Tar Man, all of it, just wonderful. Jason X or Jason in Space. I love Jason in
Space. I like Jason X too. I liked it.
Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors.
Yes.
Scream. Oh, yeah. Everybody loves Dream Warriors, right? Like, that movie's fucking fantastic.
Well, funny you should mention that because it's about a year ago, I ordained the wedding for Rodney Eastman, our friend who played in that movie, and Jennifer Rubin and the wizard guy and the black dude were all at the wedding. So it was a wedding full of Dream Warriors. So man, I wish awesome. You were there. It would have been it was awesome. And
so
yeah,
Scream, which is my favorite Wes Craven film. I just love Scream. I think I can quote that whole movie. I watched it, I think, at the right age to really fucking appreciate it.
Scream 98 or Scream 2022?
It's a Scream 9. Did you say 98?
Or 96, whenever it was.
I don't remember when it was released either. The original Scream.
Okay.
And then this one is a weird one, but I really like it. Identity.
I've never seen it. I heard it's good.
It's very good. It was really... It's an interesting take on a supernatural slasher, which isn't really supernatural, but at first you think it might be because all these people are gathered at this hotel and they don't know how they got there. All they know is they all had the same birthday, and it's got psychological elements. It's got mystery. It's got great acting. Like, the cast is amazing.
Ray Liotta's in it, right?
I think so.
I know the twist. So when I see it, it's going to be a little disappointing, but
great list.
Thank you.
Nice mix of, favorites and more obscure things that a lot of people don't pick.
See, Nicole, I thought you might be in the next book. Who knows? But
I don't think so. I don't think I qualify. I'm a more of a local legend than a celebrity,
That local legend is growing. But we actually did this on my show about a year and a half ago, and Nicole wasn't the co-host at the time. Hannah was the co-host with our friend Dustin Ferguson, who has made such great horror movies as Amityville and The Hood. I'm going to be filming a movie with him pretty soon. I was in his Apex Predator and Apex Predator 2, which I have a cameo in. But I had some very obscure ones because I have odd tastes in horror. So I'm not gonna give you the whole list, but my number 10 was Halloween 3.
Interesting.
Which Dustin agreed with.
A lot of people love it.
And I had a lot of sequels that people don't that I found. I watched more than the original movie. I know just intellectually, Halloween is better than Halloween 3. It's a better made movie. But for some reason, Halloween 3 hits me. And I watch that more every Halloween, and I don't always watch Halloween. Exorcist 3. Not Exorcist. Whoa. Exorcist 3.
Wow. I don't even think I've seen 3.
Wow.
It's, to me, once again, I know Exorcist is a scarier movie, a better made movie, but there's something about Exorcist 3 that really haunts me, and I think there's a lot of things going on. It's a very talky movie, and it's George C. Scott and Brad Dourif plays the killer, and they're both so good. And there's the guy who wrote The Exorcist directed Exorcist 3. So, and it kind of predates Silence of the Lambs in that it's a cop interviewing a serial killer, and they're kind of mental games back and forth, and it's really good.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I recommend it. But some people like it, it's talky, there's no scares, and, the studio tacked on an exorcist as the exorcism doesn't really make sense, but I still like it. So, Lost Highway. Now, is that a horror movie?
It could be. I'll give it to you.
Anything that scares you at any point of your life or that, gave suspense or thrills? Fits the mode?
Because I have to say, the scene where Robert Blake calls himself on the phone. Mm-hmm. And he hands the phone to Bill Pullman, and he's on the other line. Like, every scene with Robert Blake, and even more so now that you really know that he's a killer, just sent shivers up and down my spine. He should have got an Oscar for that and then got thrown in jail. But he really was amazing in that. And my number one is, and this is just something that when I was a kid just terrified me. And I watched it again. And oddly enough, is PG. And I still think is the scariest horror movie of all time, is Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the 1978 version. Donald Sutherland and Jeff Goldblum.
That was good. That was really a good one.
Let's see. Let's see if anyone else picked Invasion, because I know they didn't pick any of the others that you
I imagine not.
Invasion of the Body Snatchers, 56. Like a dozen people picked it, mm-hmm. but the 1978 one, Jane Wedlin.
There you go. That's pretty good company.
And
Jane Wedlin of the Go Go's.
And Jerry Reichel, I don't know if you know Jerry, she's fake Jan from the Brady Bunch. She's the one who replaced Eve
Plum. Oh, wow.
So those two picked the second.
But when they had the Brady Bunch movies and the Eve Plum didn't special. Do it.
No, they had specials on TV and it was a, right. like a variety show. Yeah. And she's also been in horror movies, The Meat Puppets and some other films.
Well, that was a good one that almost made my list. I forgot about it when I was writing the list, but I was thinking about it last night when I was coming up with my favorites. Event Horizon. When you talk about something that's not technically a horror movie, but it's scary. Event Horizon was scary.
Once again, I've never seen it. And
it's a great movie. The biggest thing that people come up with when I do like library appearances or book signings is the question of whether Jaws was a horror movie. And that made, you know, I made so many.
Of course it was.
Or King Kong. People
are terrified of sharks. I would say Jaws is like also one of the most inspirational horror movies for a lot of horror directors coming afterwards.
Absolutely. The suspense, and if it scared you, that's definitely that's the answer. And King Kong in 1931 or whenever it was in the big screen and people were running out scared of this oversized gorilla. Yeah, absolutely. So it's a wide variety, you know. Sixth Sense, is it a horror movie? It's a ghost movie. It's a ghost story.
Yeah.
Ghost story. It definitely fits the mode. That's one of my top five. The other ones that have fit in recently is one that didn't make the book and so many people haven't heard of it. It's a rock musical horror film called Phantom of the Paradise combines Phantom of the Opera with Dorian Gray with Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. It's every genre put together. I love that one. And my second favorite, probably Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, because of mixing the comedy and the horror. But my first favorite is The Exorcist, the first one, just because of, you know, it's just still scares. And it's, you know, I don't, maybe number three has more, you know, bite to it if you sit down and you really, really pay attention to the dialogue and the acting. But number one, just, you know, when I saw it, when it came out, it was like jaw dropping and it still has that same effect.
Right. Now, do you think something like Evan Costello will work now? Because I know they were trying to do Cheech and Chong Meet Friday the 13th. That never went, but like Adam, well, I mean, I'm Sandler, I guess, kind of trying to do stuff like that, but
The question is, if you release Dracula with Bela Lugosi now, would it work? And the answer is no. You know, it's outdated, it's corny. You love it for nostalgic reasons and for understanding how it, you know, set the path for so many movies after it. But nah, you can't. It just doesn't do it. It would never hold up the same way. And, it, you know, people wouldn't have the reverence for the monsters the same way. You know, you can't do a Frankenstein movie and have it successful. You know, it has
I think maybe you could do it as an action adventure, like the Mummy with Brendan Fraser, where it's not scary, but it's kind of fun. And it's like a good ride. It's kind of just a good little action adventure movie. I think you do it that way.
Or the current, you know, or even the most current Scream as you know, it's horror, yeah. But it's got so many great elements of comedy and dark humor that, you know, that's what succeeds, I think, you know. And even in what's the film where it was a slasher movie, but kept waking up a la Groundhog Day. What was that? Happy
Birthday Death Day?
happy death day, something like that.
Yeah.
That type of thing. So if you have current themes, but you inject humor in it, I think those work well.
I think there should always be a little bit of humor in horror. I think it's good for a nice little tension breaker in between, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Jason X, but you were no. But I mean, when they were trying to do like the Dark Universe, because I know you grew up with Universal Monsters, and I, you know, when we were kids, we watched it. But I think by the time it got to me, it was like, you know, it was always there. I mean, you always saw Bela Lugosi, you always saw Boris Karloff or Led Strange, more likely, as Frankenstein, and you know, and the Wolfman. But it was like, you know, I saw the Abbott Costello, and I saw, you know, by the time I saw Dracula and Frankenstein, there have been so many imitations and so many parodies that it was kind of lost on me.
Yeah, I get it. And when I try to show it to my kids, it's painful for them to watch. And I get it. You know, if they're seeing Scream and they're seeing X and they're seeing all the current films that are out, or even, you know, Stranger Things or The Baby, whatever's on, you know, it's right. Hard to then sit through a moody, atmospheric, black and white. It's slow. I get it. But they will. But any age you go to, when you say, oh, imitate a vampire, imitate a Dracula, I want to suck your blood. Even though Bella never said it in those words, that's who they go to. So that's
New Frankenstein. Because I know, like in the 90s, I think Bram Stoker's Dracula, and I even think the Frankenstein with Robert De Niro did pretty good. But I don't know. I mean, for me, I thought they both worked, and I thought they were different enough that it worked. But then when they were going to reboot the Dark Universe,
it didn't work at all. And I love the Van Helsing film. I think you
did. I liked it too.
I loved it. And I wish it did work, because it would have been an amazing to see where they would have gone with it. And Bram Stoker's Dracula absolutely brought in a whole new slew of fans to the vampire genre. Gary Oldham. And it was a great film. I love that one.
Those are like 30 years old now.
But exactly, they're not new movies, right? You know, the last 10, 15 years were more dominated by zombies than
zombies have definitely been having a moment. There's a lot of zombies.
Yeah. More so than vampires.
Although, yeah, I mean, Twilight, they had that whole run. I think vampires always seem to come around. Now, you do the Transylvania.
Vampires are cool. They're sexy. They're like, they have all the edge of a superhero plus the mystique of being a bad boy.
Yes, agreed. Yeah, the Vampire Vacations to Transylvania been doing since the 90s. And we bring groups to Romania, to the real place, and people still say, really, there really is a Transylvania? Yeah, there is. We mix the the legend of Bram Stoker's Dracula. We follow in the footsteps of Jonathan Harker, go up the Carpathian Mountains, Borgo Pass. We do all that. We go to all the three castles that are either tied in with Dracula, or we're part of the true history of Vlad the Impaler, Vlad Tepish, and we combine the history with the legend, and it's just the most amazing trip. You know, you mentioned how my book got, you know, great reviews on Amazon. I've been doing the Dracula tour, gosh, like I said, since the 90s. If there's anything in the world that gets 100% satisfaction, you show it to me, because the only thing that I've ever experienced with these tours, people come home, they have the greatest times. The people, you know, stay in touch after the tour, because everyone's like-minded. Everyone who's on the tour, you know, gets it. They're cool, they love the stuff. And for sure, to have a vacation where you're just, when you're on the coach, you're watching horror movies. You know, when you're go to the clubs at night, it's goth clubs, it's fun. It's not just in the old days, they used to have, I guess, somewhat of Dracula tours to Romania as part of a whole Romanian vacation. And they would spend one day in either Brasov or Transylvania or parts of there. And it was, you know, 9 to 6, and then the day is over. That's how those tours used to work. That's when our tours are only half done, because that's when the sightseeing stops and the partying begins. So it's an amazing trip.
And I hear the parties get pretty wild.
Parties get wild, and on the very last night, you know, people have to bring their own costumes and makeup and wigs and everything they do. That's part of it. We have a Halloween masquerade ball in Transylvania, which the Romanians don't do. So for them, they come around, all the villagers come, all the folks from all the areas come to see these crazy Americans dressed up and dancing the time warp and partying all night. News cameras come, TV crews. We're like the weird people who've come from the U.S. to celebrate our holiday in a place where they don't celebrate it where they should.
Right. The scary people in Transylvania are the Americans.
Well,
Charles and the Americans that he brought up.
Just Charles.
But, and, you know, since I know it's been, with COVID and everything, there have been restrictions, but I would imagine that the ages kind of, you get a range from young to old.
You do. Whereas with, you mentioned earlier, I do Beatle tours to Liverpool, and that skews a lot older. You know, it's people 50s, 60s, 70s, unless they're bringing kids and they've forced that generational thing. And as that tour has gone on, you know, there's less and less people who go because either they've done it already or they're too old to go or they've died off. For the Transylvania trip, you get as many 20-year-olds as you do 50-year-olds. And it's just such a great mesh. And people, it's single people, it's couples, it's, you know, it's the gay community, it's families. It really, really, the whole spectrum of people, and everyone just loves it.
Vampires bringing the world together.
that should be the catchphrase. Oh my gosh. That's the new catchphrase.
Dracula brings the world together.
There you go. I don't know if you can see me. I don't know how close
I see it. Yeah, Dracula Tour Transylvania. It's a lot of different people.
There's me. Cool. There's me in there and some Nosferatus. And
there's a lot of Nosferatus.
Multi-Nosferatus.
I guess when you lose your hair, you're just like, okay, I guess I'm Nosferatu now. What were you going to say?
Still sexy.
Still sexy, right?
Still sexy. That's what I was gonna say. All vampires are sexy. Everybody likes a vampire. Either you want to be one or you want to be with one. You know what I mean?
There you go. Well, I was gonna gloss over it, but I might as well say it now because you were talking about the Beatle tour, and this is kind of how you got started with all of this.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, and this is probably gonna mortify you and probably a good portion of the audience listening to it. Well, I'm the one person in the world that does not like the Beatles. I've been looking to find that one. Well, I know that you're into the Monkees. I like the Monkees better than the Beatles.
All right. You're entitled. When, you know, I was a kid, the Beatles were everything to me until like Sgt. Pepper came out. And I'm like, I don't get it. There's no hits on it. And I was still listening to AM radio. And for our listeners who've never heard of AM radio, it's where they played hits after hits. And so I gravitated to the Monkees, and I love the Monkees. So growing up for me, it was AM radio music, and it was the horror stuff, the monster movies. And my parents fed me that. They were great about it. They bought me all the monster models and the Beatle albums. They bought me Famous Monsters of Filmland, and they bought me 16 magazines. So I was getting best of both worlds for the stuff I loved. And never thinking that someday I would be able to turn that into, you know, a sideline. It's not my main, you know, income, but it's still, when we started the Beatle tours, it was because I wanted to go to Liverpool. And I thought, well, if I can sell 10 trips, I can get a free trip. In those days, the airlines were like that. And, you know, all of a sudden we had 50 and 100 people going, and it's like, whoa, this makes sense. And a buddy along the lines, you know, he was helping me with the tours, and he was a partner in many ways, would say, what else can we do? What else do you love? I go, well, I mean, I love monsters, but we're not going to Transylvania. And he goes, why not? And we did the research, and sure enough, and in some, you know, some of the years there, when we first got it going, and we were going out to like every convention in the country to promote it, we had like three busloads. We had 150 people going. We were taking over whole communities with it. And to be able to go and see where Vlad was buried, where he was born, all that historical stuff, Paneri Castle, where, you know, he actually lived and the ruins are still there. It's got such great historic value for someone who's a student of that, but also sure, the people who love, you know, Bela and Christopher Lee and all the vampires through the years, what better trip can you go on? It really, really hits and works.
And you were a DJ for a while, and also in a Monkees cover band.
How do you know that?
Yeah, I research things. But
yeah, I've been DJing.
Who are you in the Monkees tribute band?
Well, give me bangs and know that I don't play an instrument except maracas and a tambourine. And I was Davy. Oh, I could hide neath the wings of the bluebird. Yeah, I was Davy.
You were Davy. Wow. Okay.
Davy and Monkey.
I was thinking more of a Mickey Dolenz, but.
Well, I'm only 4 foot five, so it makes sense. You can't tell that.
You're definitely wearing Michael Nesmith, that's for sure.
We had a great Nesmith with big sideburns. Great guitarist. His name was John Sheridan. Great guy. The reason for the Monkey Mania band, why I was in a Monkees tribute band, is because I was producing a few Monkee conventions in the 80s when nobody was a Monkees fan. I mean, that was the dark hole. Sorry, not dark mark. I keep saying dark.
That's all right. Yes.
Of Monkeydom. And we had a few conventions and then we didn't have a band. So I said, no problem. We'll put one together. And we did, and we were decent. We actually played the punk clubs as warm-ups before we played the convention to get our chops.
And, that's great. And
the new wave people, the punk people, the goth people loved us because it was power pop. You know, we were playing the versions of all the songs a little faster and a little clunkier. That was a nice period. And then once the conventions were done, that was the end of the Monkey Mania band.
But here's the thing now. You say, you know, this was the dark hole of Monkey Mania. It wasn't in the late 80s a big resurgence in the Monkees because they started playing the shows on MTV and they got back together, or three 86, of them got back together?
86. All of a sudden, yeah, they're on MTV like 24/7. They're hot again. They've got a hit called This Is Then, This Is That, This Was Then, That Was Then, This Is Now. Right. They're back. They're the biggest selling touring group of all. They're blowing away whoever's touring. And sure enough, they pretty much stayed together until they've been, you know, passing away. And we've done conventions through the years. You mentioned that I'm a DJ. I'm a party DJ. I do, you know, weddings, bar mitzvahs, all that stuff. Been doing that forever. And that is my main, you know, my main vocation. But I'm also a DJ on the air. I do the Monkees interview show on Monkey Mania Radio, which is on live365.com. And every weekend I'm doing another guest who either played with the Monkees or toured with the Monkees, was a Monkee, is a Monkees collector, wrote a book, anything like that. So yeah, I think, you know, there's enough of those Beatle programs out there. Between Sirius and every radio station that has their breakfast with the Beatles. But I felt there was a real big gap. And so when the Monkee station announced, I put in a bid and said, can I be the guy who does the interviews? Because I love to talk. I mean, you can tell. And
you don't say.
And I've got, you know, that New York swagger and a bit of a personality. So it was perfect for the station because the rest of the station is, you know, all music. So this has been fun.
Yeah, sadly. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Nicole.
I was just curious, what was your favorite Monkees song to perform?
Shades of Grey, and I don't know if you've ever heard it. It's a vocal that was shared by Peter Tork and Davy Jones, which was very rare. It's a beautiful song. The reason I loved it is because I didn't have to do the lead, but I got to do the harmonies, and that was a nice switch because most of the songs I had to do the lead on. So that was a nice change. We did a Monkees convention in 2013 after Davy had passed. And David Cassidy was the guest, Peter Tork, Mickey Dolenz, Davy Jones's daughters, really an all-star convention. And it was late in the day. David Cassidy was running late, and I'm on stage, I'm the MC, and I'm just thinking I'm stalling here, and my kid walks in. Now mind you, he's what, seven, I don't know, six, and he knew all the Monkees songs. And I come up, get up, he comes on stage, and I have him sing Davy's song, I Want to Be Free, which is, if you know Monkees songs, Daydream Believer and I Want to Be Free are probably the closest two songs associated with Davy. And the whole audience was singing along. And as it ended, David Cassidy walked in. The timing was perfect. So, you know, that was a more shining moment than all of the Monkey Mania band performances, was having my kid come on stage and get to sing a Monkey song. That was special.
That's cute. That's really fun. Great memory.
Yeah.
Yeah, I sadly live in Los Feliz. I live really down the street from where they had their last performance. I mean, I guess
the great
Nesmith had their, they did the farewell tour, and then like he died like a month later.
Yeah.
So weird.
It's like a miracle that he made it through the tour. And I think it was the tour that kept him alive long enough. One fed the other, because he was very sick and he was very frail. And, you know, just to have seen him in the concert was very special. He was much weaker than he was when he played LA. As the tour went on, he got a little stronger. But it was also at the Greek Theater where the four of them reunited. And it was the only show they did as a foursome, because the three were touring forever, Peter, Mickey, right, and Davey. So yeah, LA is a very big Monkees area. And the fact that there's the Monkees star on the Walk of Fame, which they attended, it's really special. LA is a real important place to the Monkees.
Now, for what it's worth, Charles, can you agree? Because I think so. Monkey should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I don't see why they wouldn't be.
Don't get me started. The Drifters never sang their own songs. Great vocalists.
Right.
The Coasters, the Platters. I can go on and on. What other band inspired so many, besides the Beatles, inspired so many musicians? And, you know, there was thousands of bands who still say, well, I was a little too young to have seen the Beatles, but it was the Monkees that got a guitar in my hand, you know.
The Mamas. Well, I would argue Joy Division, but that's a whole nother story. But I think the Monkees, everybody knows who they are, and they revolutionized rock and roll on TV. Absolutely. And their songs are great.
And their songs are great, and the vocals on the songs are great. And the fact that they weren't allowed, don't forget, they could play their instruments. They weren't allowed to, because the Wrecking Crew played all the stuff. Well, the Wrecking Crew played on the Beach Boys and on the Mamas and the Papas, sure, and just about every band at the time.
And you know, I'm a believer, has spanned generations. Kids know it from Shrek.
Yes, yes. Look, you know, you're not going to get an argument on me. I'll go on forever about how the Monkees should be in the Hall of Fame.
Well, unfortunately, there's other things I want to get into. So we all agree Monkees should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And there's kick Randy Newman, Buffalo Springfield out. They're okay, but they're not Rock and Roll Hall of Fame material. Let's be honest. Name another Buffalo Springfield song besides that one. I don't know any. But anyway, let's neither here nor there. So let's go back. How does a guy growing up in the Bronx, as you did, end up as a Mets fan?
We'll see. You know, I thought the question was going to be, growing up in the Bronx, wasn't that scary enough that I didn't need to go into the horror stuff? That's what I was waiting for. My dad was from Brooklyn. It was a mixed marriage. Dad was Brooklyn, mom was the Bronx.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's what it is. Okay.
Yeah, because if you were a Dodgers fan before they went to LA, you became a Mets fan. Right. That's what it was.
Even though you're right by Yankee Stadium.
I went to many more Yankee games than Met game. I saw Mickey Mantle. I saw a lot of the greats. But yeah, the Yankees were my second favorite team. I didn't understand the concept of, if you love one, you hated the other. Mets fan first, Yankee second.
Right. So Nicole, that's all the baseball talk we're going to have today. But the Bronx, growing up in the Bronx must have been as scary as any horror movie.
I just gave you that line. You're not like,
hey, you know what? I'll take it. Whatever.
I brought
thing that he always hears. I'm sure people always were saying something.
We were talking baseball. You just threw me a little slider across the middle. I'm going to hit it for a home run.
Lobbed it over.
You lobbed it right out after. Yeah, yes.
So where I was born and raised in the East Bronx, and I took my kids back there about 5-6 years ago to show them where Daddy grew up and was born, and they would not get out of the car. It's scarier now than it was then.
I have the exact same story.
Yeah.
Because I was born in Brooklyn.
Uh-huh.
Listen to this. We went across the country in an RV in a motorhome when I was like 10 years old.
Yeah.
And my parents wanted to show me the old neighborhood in Brooklyn.
Uh-oh.
We were driving a motorhome through, this isn't gentrified Brooklyn, this is pre-gentrified Brooklyn.
Sure.
And people were, everybody was very befuddled to see a motorhome in Brooklyn and yelling and just all sorts of things happening on the corners. And we're just like, okay, can we leave now? Because it was a little frightening.
It shocks me when we moved to Connecticut, and we still would go back and visit. I had grandparents who were living in Brooklyn and would not move, and they lived on New Lots Avenue. And my gosh, the worst of the worst. And I didn't understand how we could still visit them and not be afraid to get out of the car, and how they would actually shop in the area.
We must be separated at birth, because my grandmother lived in Freeport for a long time, longer than she really should have. And so they were the only white couple on the block.
Sure.
And you know, everybody kept trying to buy their house, but they're like, no, we've been here the whole time, and saw the whole neighborhood change. And you know, they finally went to Florida, which I guess is, you know, federally mandated, but you know, that happened. But what was the first convention that you did?
First convention I ever did was a Beatles convention when I was still in college, not knowing that a kid can't just put on a convention. You know, I learned all the things not to do, you know, had it in a little hotel, lost a lot of my parents' money, sold off all of my Beatle butcher covers and rare stuff to reimburse them. But I thought, well, you know what? I learned what I can do. Then had it at a college the next year, and the college co-sponsored it. So half the people who attended were students, and it grew from there, to the point that in 84, when the Beatles had their 20th anniversary, I was producing shows in Miami and Seattle and Cleveland. I was doing them all over the place within a few year period. And I was kind of the go-to for a really, like, Pete Best, who was the Beatles' first drummer, Cynthia Lennon, who was married to John Lennon, really cool guests. I just love conventions, you know, whether it's a Comic-Con or something I produced. My proudest one was in 2010. We did something called Rock Con, which was the weekend of 100 rock stars. I don't know if that was in your research, but what I did is
was my research in that this wasn't one of your big successes.
No, it was my biggest financial loser and my best event. You know, people like Tommy James, Al Jardine from the Beach Boys, Mary Wilson from the Supremes, Little Anthony, all these greats, you know, who's who in
50s. And Nicole and our listeners, this was, once again, you with the numerology, this was 100 rock stars at a convention. And to me, I would think that would be a home run. And, you know, the people that you had, you know, you're talking about, you know, people, the rock stars you had in your book, there's a Beatle in your book. I don't know if they were at the convention, but I know two of the Cars are in your book, Elliot Easton and Greg Hawk from the Cars. You said Jane Wedlin from the Go-Go's. They're, by the way, both those bands in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and deservedly. But
that is Dunaway from Alice Cooper's band has a chapter in my book from Rock and Roll.
Right, so you the rock stars that you got for this thing span generations, and it's right in New York at the Meadowlands, or right in the New York area. Right. I would think home run.
Tell me, Mark, why wasn't it? I didn't have...
I've got a theory.
Yeah, please.
You know better than I do. So why do you think it didn't work?
I think it didn't work because no first convention works. And I learned that with Beatles, and I learned that with so many things. You know, when Chiller Theater, which is one of the most famous conventions on the East Coast, started, it had a few hundred people, and it built up. Comic-Con in San Diego, 120 people when at first it built up. Didn't have deep enough pockets to do it again the next year and do it for, maybe I should have done 50 rock stars to start with and built up, awesome. You know. but please, I don't
here's,
know.
Here's my theory, and I don't know. And this is part of the reason, this is why I really want to get into the cons, because I want to go to cons. I want to go to more cons than I do. I just went to Fear Fest in Las Vegas, had a blast. And this was the first time they had it on, and it was small, but they knew it was going to be small, and they had, and so they booked it just in a couple rooms at the Rio. It was just the right size. Everybody had a great time. They had all sorts of interactive things. It was great. And it's a great thing to build on. I don't know if they made money or lost money, but I think that they probably broke even, and they have a good base for next year. I hope so. I don't know. But what is very successful is Fantasy Camp.
Yeah.
Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp. So for some reason, people love going to horror conventions. People like going to other conventions. And you know, you've had Beatle conventions in the past, so maybe I'm all way off base on this. But I think people want to have rock stars show them how to play an instrument rather than just meet them and take a picture with them or sign an autograph. Whereas like an actor, it's a different thing.
So that's an interesting observation. David Fischoff, who was the producer of the Fantasy Rock Camps, dear friend of mine. He's the one who reunited the Monkees in 86, took them on tour. He got Ringo back on. He studied what I did at Rock On, and we were in touch. And he says, he understood. He says, nah, it's cool that you got all these people and, you know, you keep doing it. I'm sure it'll wind up a success. But I'd rather someone give me $1,000 to have a more intimate, personal, what you just described, learn how to play chords, you know, from a guitarist, then come in and be shepherded through and, okay, here's his autograph, see you later. And it's, yeah, more people will pay $20 to do a convention, but even if you get 500 people paying that $20, if you get a dozen people paying the premium, Rock Fantasy is much more successful. And he was right. And you're right. And you know, I still think that had I stuck to it. So during COVID, you know, when I couldn't do anything except put out books, my thinking was, what can I do? How can I go out of the barrel, out of my box and do something different, knowing that I love doing conventions and I'm good at them now. And a friend of mine started getting me really, really involved with paranormal investigations, Nick Grossman. Mm-hmm. And we became para partners. We were the shaman and the showman. He's the shaman because he's psychic and clairvoyant and he's the real deal. I'm the showman. I know how to produce. I know how to put on a show. And so we put on last year Paracon in Connecticut. I expected 100 people, right? 2 days we had 1,500. So we're doing it again. Paracon 2.
Awesome.
Paracon 2.
And this time we have John Zaffis, who was the nephew of the Warrens, you know, the Conjuring people, the Warrens. And we've got the amazing Kreskin, and people are shocked that he's still alive and still does this stuff. So we did it the right way. We started small. We did it in an armory, sold it out. Doing it again, same place with more guests. And so hopefully we'll succeed.
Now, Charles, explain to our audience and some people who don't know who the amazing Kreskin is.
The amazing Kreskin is the first of the, well, celebrity mentalists. You know, now there's a ton of them. You can go to any church and they have a mentalist come in and read people's minds because there's tricks to it and there's ways to do that. It's mental manipulation. Kreskin was the first. He was on Johnny Carson, the Tonight Show, all the time. And Carson loved him to the point that Carson, you know, the great Carsini or whatever he did, like where he'd read magic and do that stuff. But Kreskin really was, when you talk magic, the first name that comes to mind is Houdini, right?
Yeah.
No doubt. You talk rock and roll, some people it's the Beatles, some people Zeppelin, whatever. When you talk paranormal, the first name that comes to mind is the Warrens. And that's largely because of the Conjuring movies. In the East Coast, everyone always knew the Warrens, but now, well, when it comes to mentalism, Kreskin is the name that comes out. So people who do a lot of mentalism now, who do the hypnotism, who do all that stuff, really, he's the godfather of it.
And I just looked up Wikipedia, he's 87.
Wow. God bless him. We got a month to go to the show. Kreskin, stay
yes.
well. We
yes, want yes, you to yes, be there. Yes, yes. I'm crossing my fingers now, Kreskin. Please.
You don't have to. He predicted he'll be well for it. So he'll
oh, good. Well. That's good. That's good. So, you know, I mean, the people that you got in the book, speaking, I mean, Kreskin's 87, William Shatner's 90. He's in your book.
Great.
How do you get William Shatner for that?
All right. So Shatner, I can't take all the credit for. A good friend of mine is his handler. And I said, I threw it out there and I never thought he would. And when his list came in, I said, you know, Shatner is big enough, the only one in the whole book who's going to get two lists. So I wrote a list of what I thought were Shatner's greatest genre roles. Twilight Zone, all the things that he was in. That was one top 10. And then the list he actually gave us as his top 10. Yeah, he's probably the biggest name in there. I'm really proud to have him
in there. So as a bonus, when you get that book, you get the top 10 William Shatner roles.
Yeah, absolutely. And,
Was there anyone you got into the book that like was very difficult for you to track down, or they were more resistant or hesitant?
Yes. Yes. So for some reason, I got this bug up my ass that I needed to get Ed Asner. I don't know why.
Lou Grant, the Mary Tyler Moore show up. If people don't know.
Crotchety Lou Grant, you know, star of voice up. Right. For some reason, this was the one that I had to get no matter what I did. And I sent it to his agent and it got ignored. I sent it to his manager. It got ignored. I found his home address, sent it there, ignored. The studio, nothing worked. Finally, he was going to do a show on Broadway. I did not do that. I sent flowers, I sent chocolates, and I said, please give me this list. If not, I'm going to give up. And he wrote back, you're better than Scotland Yard. And he gave me, if I could find his list, he gave me an autographed photo with four or five of his list, and goes, you know Howard better than I do, you do the rest. But he sent me this amazing amazing photo of himself. And sure enough, he gave me Psycho, Alien, Oliver Twist. He goes, when the character popped up behind the tombstone, I leaped into my date's lap. And I don't get it, but Rebecca of Funny Folk Farm, which was Get Smart, Season 5, Episode 17, Ed Asner picked it, and he writes, actress Gail Sondergaard could creep me out even today. It was worth pursuing, was it not?
Absolutely. Wow, that's what a list. And obviously a big Hitchcock fan.
Yeah, I, you know, he's one of the few in the book that I let ride on not giving me full 10. The other one was John Sebastian from The Lovin' Spoonful.
Right.
Woodstock legend.
Welcome back. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Instead of giving me a top 10 list, he gave me stories of when he was young and got scared. And the stories were so good, I had to put it in there.
Nice. Right, and also Boris Karloff's daughter didn't quite give you a top 10 horror list.
Oh, you are good. You are good. So I needed to get a Karloff in there. I mean, that's credibility.
But you didn't get a Lugosi, right?
Well, so I'm friends with Bela Lugosi's granddaughter, Lynn. And mm-hmm. Lynn, we've done interviews with her. And the first one I asked was her dad, which is Bela Lugosi Jr. He's a lawyer. He's an attorney in L.A. And I said, you know, I'd really love a list from you. And they felt tapped out. They'd done so many things. They passed on it. She's since then has seen the book, loves the book. We've gotten closer and said, if I do a sequel, she'll do the forward. So
that's great.
Bride of Book of Top 10 list, when it comes out, we'll have a Lugosi. But anyway, so getting to Sarah. Sarah Charles, you know I don't like horror movies. I wouldn't even watch my dad's movies, but I'll give you a list, a top 10 list of things that scare me. Wouldn't you know, number 10 is having to do this list for your book. Good job, Sarah. Well done.
And was there anybody you said the Lugosi's, but is there anybody that you tried to get that you couldn't get?
Yeah, lots of people. Ron Chaney, who was a Lon Chaney relative. Many more people I didn't get than I got.
You had 80, like you said, in the can from your... Yeah. Was there any of those that you cut out to make room for other people?
I think I lost a few because I did have Eve Plum. At one point, I was trying to get like the whole Brady Bunch, and I have Barry Williams is in the book and Jerry Reichel's in the book. And for some reason, Eve Plum never made it. And there were a few people who said, why didn't you use my list? And I'm like, I got a list from you. And I was like so embarrassed because I guess there were a few that gave me the list that didn't make the book. But, you know, having these lists on a computer from 12 years ago, thank God the 70 or 80 made it through.
Right.
because I guess there were some that, you know, didn't make it. And of course there's some from people who passed on. So thank goodness I got them when I did. I know you're not a big Beatles fan, but I'm working on the book of top 10 Beatle lists.
No, that's good for you. That'll do great.
It will do great, I think. But I wish I started it 20 years ago or 15 or 10 years ago, because we've lost so many people who would have given me great lists for the book who just not around. And I'm not going to sit there and make up their lists.
But you do have an unnamed Beatle that did do a list for the book. And I'm not going to name because I don't know, but that's pretty good.
Shall I tell
you? I'm impressed. Ringo?
the drummer before Ringo.
Pete Best. That was my next guess. Because you have McCartney, but not Paul McCartney.
I have Angie McCartney, who was his dad's wife, his stepmom. A lot of those kind of things, right? John Lennon's sister, Julia, is in the book. And I got to mention her all the time. Every interview, people, why do I mention her? She's like Sarah Karloff in that she's not a horror fan. And she doesn't like anything that scares her. But she says, leave it to me and I'm going to come up with something for you, Charles. I don't want to leave you without my list. Waited. A month goes by, 2 months. Finally, I get this dissertation. It's this college-like, unbelievable thesis on the horrors in literature with an emphasis on Shakespeare's horror works. And it was just, wow. This in itself could have been a book. It's the largest chapter in the book. It's the most literate. It's, you know, John Lennon's sister Julia gave us the list that shocks everybody.
Well, one thing that didn't come up in my research that's come up a few times on the show, I'm guessing you're a big Brady Bunch fan.
Somewhat, you know, always watch the show. All the Brady Bunch people came to the monkey conventions because of the monkeys and Brady Bunch tie-in.
Is there a tie-in? I don't know.
No, the monkeys appeared on that reunion movie and the Brady Bunch movie.
Oh, I did. Oh,
the sequel.
It's been so long. Yeah.
Just, you know, it's pop culture, right? If you love the monkeys, you love the Archies. If you love the Archies, you know, it's on and on. It's 6 degrees of separation between the stuff you love and the stuff you love because of the original reason you loved it.
Right. Now, besides Ed Asner, is there anybody that have been, I mean, I don't mean to be morbid, but we're talking to the guy who does the Ghost Tour and Vampire Tour, the Transylvania Tour. Besides Ed Asner, is there anybody who has passed away since the books were published?
Yeah, if you grew up in New York, but it's before your time. If you watched horror TV, there was a host called Zachary Lee, and he was, Chiller Theater. He was the monster.
I know Zachary Lee, sure.
Great horror host. If you grew up listening to radio, you knew Cousin Brucey and Dan Ingram and all these great Murray the K, all these great DJs. Well, there was this music guy named Clay Cole, who was like what Zachary Lee was to horror, Clay Cole was to rock and roll. He did a show from Palisades Park. He's the only guy who did a TV show that had the Stones and the Beatles. He had the Rolling Stones live and the Beatles by videotape. And Clay Cole gave me a great list. He's passed since. I guess I can go through here and we can see, you know, who's passed, you know, but fortunately most are still alive and most have given
this actually is a good segue. Nicole, once again, can you believe it's been an hour? What another great show.
Wow.
But 2022 has been so great. We've had such great guests. Such
yes.
Great
show.
But now tell us about, it's not Crypt Keeper Chucky, but Crypt Master Chucky. Now this is your alter ego.
This guy right there?
Yeah, tell us about this guy. Because now you are a bit of a horror host yourself.
So there was a TV, no, not TV. There's this production company called Scared Stiff, and they're based in Connecticut, and they put out a lot of horror shorts, and they're great. I've been in a bunch of them. I do some acting on the side, as you may or may not know. Some of these.
I know. We're going to get to Flight of the Conchords, all that.
Yeah. So he decided he was going to do an anthology where he would show his show, but he'd have a horror host bring on the show and do the raps and do the endings and do a little bit of shtick in between. And so I did that. And then there was a few conventions where I didn't have a book yet, but I wanted to be that con guy. I didn't want to just attend it. What could I do? I'm a DJ. And let me come and DJ your party, your cons, and I'll come as this character. And that was Crypt Master Chucky. Well, I opened up a haunted attraction in Connecticut called Fright Haven, which was very successful and is very successful. I since sold it before COVID, but that was when I hosted and welcomed people, in my brain, I was Crypt Master Chucky because I needed to be that persona.
And how is Crypt Master Chucky different from Charles Rosnay?
You know, Charles is a little funnier. Crypt Master is a little scarier. There's no difference. Believe me, it's just makeup.
No, I was. I was actually looking online, and I couldn't find it. But appearance as Elton John on The Flight of the Conchords, which I think is your biggest acting credit to date. And how did that come about?
Season two, in the episode called Prime Minister. You know, I was auditioning for a lot of stuff in New York that at that point. It was just a fun thing. It was a lark. And I was getting stuff. And I'm like, whoa, this is so easy. You know, if I'm in LA and I'm, you know, waiting on tables, I'm not getting any roles. But I guess, you know, if being in Connecticut, there's not a lot. I was getting a lot of stuff in Connecticut. But for some reason, I got this call. And I learned that you never say no. Can you be a skateboarder? Oh, yeah, yeah, I've always done that. And then you learn how to do it. And by the time the show is, well, I got a call and said, so you do rock and roll imitations, right? And I thought, uh-oh, someone wants me to do Davy Jones or McCartney or Elton or something, or Billy Joel or one of those. And when I used to appear in a nightclub, I used to do 50, this is not in your research, I did 50 costume changes a night. It was one of those oldies clubs where you acted out the songs that you played. So if I did Elvis, I had the sideburns. If I did McCartney, I wore a Sergeant Pepper outfit. So I figured I was getting a call from a party that wanted a guy who's going to do a celebrity. She goes, have you done Elton John? Yes, the answer is yes.
Yes,
great, because we need an Elton John for a show where we're going to have a lot of tribute acts. Okay, so I show up. Now, mind you, I didn't have HBO and I didn't know of Flight of the Conchords, and there was the Bee Gees were there, and the guys from U2, and I'm like, what is going on? There's a Cher, and there's another Elton John, Patton Oswalt, the actor.
Right.
And they go, you're going to be the other Elton John, and you're going to chase him, and he's going to be mad that you're here. And I, okay, whatever you say. Well, it turns out that the scenes I was in really worked well. I'm with him in some of the scenes. In other scenes, there's a Barack Obama imitator. Art Garfunkel himself is in that episode.
I saw a few clips on YouTube, but basically the whole story is that, you know, these guys are a band, and their agent's like, yeah, we want you to be a Simon and Garfunkel. Basically, right. What you did, they're like, we want you to be a Simon and Garfunkel cover act.
Right.
And they're like, well, we can't do that. We don't look like them. They're like, just put on wigs, it'll be fine. And then they do it. And then the guy who plays Garfunkel apparently starts sleeping with this girl who's obsessed with Art Garfunkel.
Yes.
And then it turns out she really went out with Art Garfunkel, and he comes to get her back.
Right. This is brilliant. It's really brilliant. They put the hat on me, the glasses, the high heels, the sequins, and the finishing touch. I said, you know, Elton John's mouth is different. I was doing weird things with my mouth, and it wasn't anything like that. He had a gap in his teeth. Right. So they took eyebrow liner, they did something, and they put a big gap in there, and pow! That did it. All of a sudden, yes, I was Elton. I've since done a movie. When you mentioned, what was the movie you mentioned about the hotel where they're all called together at the hotel? It was one of your top three?
Identity.
Identity. So this movie, actually, when they told me the plot of it, I thought of Identity. It's called Night at Eagle, at the Eagle Inn. It was just made, winning a lot of small awards for the independent places that it's showing. And I got to be this crazy debutante, all in drag, saying, you'll never get out of here. And I really, really camped it up and had a lot of fun with it. So even though Elton is probably my best known role because it's on HBO and all that, the most fun one was the one I just did recently for a movie, Night at the Eagle Inn.
That sounds right up my alley. I'd love that.
You would love it. I'm sure it's streaming. I'm sure you could find it. And
Night at Eagle Inn, we'll look for it.
I'm in the TV monitor in the beginning. I'm the first one to warn her to get out, and she doesn't know how to listen to me.
Well, you actually took your own advice. I heard you on another podcast, and basically, because I guess your kids are starting to get the show business bug, and why not? You've been making a living in show business your whole life, but I know it's been ups and downs, and hasn't always been easy. But your advice on the podcast was, be bigger.
Yeah, go bigger. And I think that's very important. My kids don't take my advice on that. They're still more reserved than, but they have more talent. I mean, they can actually carry a note, and they, you know, they have perfect pitch, and they can act, and they can do all things that I only fake. But yeah, go bigger. I was on the Steve Union show, and I said, I think that's been the difference. Because if you overact, a director can tone you down. You can, you know, they can say, hey, chill out with that accent, calm down. But if you're understated, well, everyone is understated. There's 100 understateds that, you know, see you next. I want to be the one that they remember. I want to be the one that goes a little bigger and is a little either louder or sillier or more ridiculous. And it's, right. It seemed to have worked. Yeah.
I guess, yeah, your kids haven't taken your advice, but maybe Al Pacino heard it, because when he first started, he was very shy, and now he just, every scene, he's like this. So I don't know what's going on there. Yeah. But in The Godfather, he's like, well, it's not personal, Sonny. It's only business. And now he's like, wow, you got a great ass, you know, so, yeah. But before we go, I got a couple other questions now. And I definitely want to have you on when you have your next book. Or next thing, we definitely want to have you on. You're definitely awesome. But
next week, my new book will be out. It's called No. Just kidding.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if we can bump Mischief the Clown, but we'll see what we can do. But so the whole thing about now, what advice do you have people that want to start cons or be in cons? Because it's exploded. I mean, well, first off, let me ask you this. I just asked you a question. Now I'm going to ask you a different one. What's the difference between the cons when you started in the 80s and now?
Oh, at our cons, we were happy to get one guest. You know, now it's every convention out. If you're talking about horror conventions, outdoing the ones before it. What's been a real amazing ride with the book is the fact that I can be on the other side of the table and sign copies of the book. That's really been the greatest thrill of the book, because it hasn't sold a million copies. You know, I never expected it to be a moneymaker, but this is what that was one of the goals, was to go to there's a new convention that opened in Florida called Horrorville. And, you know, the gal from Sleepaway Camp, was one of the guests. The guys from Texas
Felicia Chamber. Jones.
Felicia.
I think it's Rose. Jones.
Felicia Rose.
I'm sorry, right. Rose, yeah. Jones.
She was there, and all the guys from Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and I'm on the same bill, and I'm there, and this guy's never done a convention before, so let me take over, let me host, I'll interview them. This was great. Now, I would never have had that opportunity had I not had this book. Another convention was DeadCon in Fort Wayne, Indiana, who did like RockCon. They went overboard. They had Lita Ford, and they had just too many guests, unfortunately, and he lost a fortune. I don't know if he'll ever recoup to have another show, but I was at the past two chillers with the book, and I'm probably forgot what your question was, but anyway.
Well, no, I was going to say the difference between when you started in the 80s and now. I mean, it's exploded in the last 10 years.
Yeah, yeah. So in really? In those days, you had to force the issue. Nobody understood what a con was. You had to really promote. Now you just get word out and everyone wants to go.
Right.
And people already have under their arms, you know, I need this machete signed by this person. I want this mask signed. They already, you know, are going there with the intent. The last Chiller Theater, you know, I did a photo op with Mickey Dolenz at the Monkey's Car. I did a photo op with Christopher Lloyd at the Back to the Future DeLorean. That was a great thrill. And, you know, I get it. So people already want, they're conditioned, they're conditioned. That, you know, in the earlier days, they had to be taught what it was. It was a learning experience. Like, why would someone go to a Beatles convention and pay, this drove me crazy, pay $10 and get 50 dealers, 10 hours of enjoyment, 10 bands, 5 special guests, when they can go see Beatlemania and pay $50 at the local concert hall? Well, the local concert hall sold out. They would have their 10,000 people to see Beatlemania, mm-hmm, paying $50 a ticket. I was giving them Beatlemania times 100. I was giving them, but they weren't conditioned for conventions yet. Mm-hmm. So that's the biggest difference is, you know, people get it. They Comic-Con, they hear about it. It's on entertainment. You hear it. You know what it is, and you're bringing your kids to it, and you're going and going and going.
know, when I was a kid in San Diego, I went to Comic-Con, it was all just comic book artists signing things. Now it's ridiculous. Nicole, you had a question.
I do. I wanted to know who would be your ultimate guest to get at a convention if you could get anyone.
Wow, great question. I think the ultimate horror guest is Jamie Lee Curtis for a convention. Okay. And for a Beatles, we always wanted George Martin. Well, if you couldn't get one of the Beatles, obviously, George Martin, who was their producer, or Julian Lennon, who was the son, who was John's son, who was very successful. But there weren't a lot of guests in the Beatles world who I wasn't able to get. In the Monkees world, my God, they were great. Peter, Mickey, Davey, they would come to conventions. They were there. You had a convention, you invited them, they would come. Unheard of in the early 80s, the first Monkee convention that I ever produced, the gal was doing them in New Jersey. I want to do it in Connecticut. I'm doing Beatles shows. I said, come to Connecticut and we'll bring it to another level. She believed me, it succeeded. And we got Peter Tork to come. He's living in Greenwich Village. He wasn't making a lot of money. I remember I sent him a check to come and he came and he said, I don't have a checking account. Can you cash this for me? Like wow. In those days. Yeah. So that was a really big deal. So, yep, that's the answer. Jamie Lee Curtis in the horror world, Beatles now, if you know, there's no way Ringo.
Obviously, McCartney would be number one.
They would
one.
Never do it. I mean, they're getting, you know, millions of dollars to do concerts and appearances. They're never.
You probably take Sean Lennon before Ringo, but, you know, I got to be honest, I like Ringo because The Magic Christian is one of my favorite movies. I think that's hilarious, but that's me. But
the great soundtrack by the Ivies, who became Badfinger.
But the last question, and I probably should have thrown this out earlier. For some reason, the same thing happened last week. The paranormal questions didn't come till later because you're so much fun. But the ghost tours, the vampire tours, what crazy things have happened that can't really be explained?
Amazingly enough, I've done ghost tours to England, Ireland, Scotland, Israel, Cuba, Hungary, Germany, Prague, ghost tours everywhere. Never had that one unbelievable experience encounter. The trips have been amazing.
What does a ghost tour in Israel
What's not scary? It's all biblical. Wars and any place where there were wars and horrors, you know, is the same. I got that question with Cuba too. Cuba and Israel. And the people who went had the greatest times. But the scary encounter, the scariest thing, I should have started it that way because now you're going to see it coming. It was in Transylvania. We checked into a resort on the first night. Normally we'd stay downtown Bucharest, but the hotel we normally stayed at was under renovation. So they said, would you mind staying at a fancy resort for the same price? Although it's not thematically, you know, horror. We said, all right, you know, for one night we'll tough it out and go to a place that has a spa and a pool and all that. Well, anyway, come to find out when we get there that it used to be a convent and an insane asylum. This is perfect. We couldn't have planned it better. Well, we get there and we're, you know, after flying, we're jet lagged. Everyone just wants to sleep. But I
fortunately, it just hit me, a convent and an insane asylum.
Yeah.
Which basically is the same thing.
Ooh, good one. Yes.
Anyway, go ahead.
Mark's a comedian.
Yeah.
It just took me like 30 seconds. Go ahead.
So I forced them to stay up to have dinner and an orientation the first night, and then they can go to sleep. Because if they go to sleep the second we get to the hotel at 2 or 3, then they're waking up at 1 a.m. and it screws everything up. So we keep them awake. And I say, we're going to meet. We're going to have, if you want to take a half hour nap, you want to go to the bathroom, whatever you want to do. Okay. But we're eating dinner. We're meeting at 6. We're going to walk the grounds, have dinner at 7.
It's very nice of you to allow them to go to the bathroom, by the way. Go ahead.
Not usually. That's a rare occasion. All right. So they all come down. They're like this. And we have dinner. And, you know, you wake up a little. You have a few drinks. One couple did not come down. And we figured, all right, well, you know, they're either shacking up or they really, really, they really, really were overtired. finally let him go to sleep around 9 o'clock, which is just perfect. Next day we get up at 8. We need to leave at 9. We're at the front desk. The couple comes down and yeah, they're wide awake and chipper and all that. Well, you guys missed a nice dinner and a nice orientation. They go, yeah, well, we had snacks. We were okay. We woke up around midnight and we, you know, walked around. And I go, oh yeah, you saw the grounds? And they go, no, we kind of went down to the basement. Now, wait, you're laughing already. We knew about the basement because the front desk told us after orientation, they said, before you go to bed, you might as well walk to the basement because there's a really cool basement and it's a long corridor and it's dark, blah, blah. But don't try to get to the sub basement and the door will be locked anyway. So what it was, the first thing we tried to do was go to the sub basement, of course, and it was locked and it was a cool, it really was like tunnels under the whole resort, under the whole property. Really, really cool. Well, this couple comes down and they said, you know, hey, we went to the basement. And, oh yeah, we did too. We went as a group. That was cool. They go, yeah, yeah. But we went down and it was, do you know, there's multiple layers of that basement. And the guy behind the desks, his, you know, his eyes, he perks up and he go, and the couple goes, yeah, we went, I guess it's like, a basement under the basement. They didn't know it was called a sub. They go down there and they go, yeah, we couldn't really see. There's no lights down there. So we lit a match. And then halfway there, the security guard wasn't really happy we were there. But we kept going and we turned around because we felt we should apologize to him in case he spoke English. But it was really weird because he was dressed in this military outfit and he didn't look well. And they go on and on and they described him. And they said, but when we went back to apologize, he wasn't there. And the guy behind the desk says, wow, you saw him. And that's all we had to hear because this is a ghost that haunts this resort and stays in that area. And that's why they had it locked off. He was beyond, he couldn't understand how they got down there. The door was locked. He checked it afterwards. But somehow that's the scary story that happened on one of our Dracula tours.
Pretty incredible.
Cool, right? Cool.
It's scary. Alien Resurrection, I'll tell you that.
You mean Alien versus Predator, you mean?
Well, Resurrection. No, don't dog out Alien versus Predator. Anyway, we've had so much fun, Charles. I got to tell you, you're a great guest. And tell everybody your book and all of the cons and all of the tours that you have coming up. Please, it's the floor is yours to promote.
100 celebrities. It's a pop culture book. If you love top 10 lists, if you love reading what celebrities have to say, in the back there's an index. So you could, if your favorite movie is Psycho, you can see which ones pick that. It's the book of top 10 horror lists. It's on Amazon. If you want to get a signed copy from me, I would be honored to personalize it. Take off the word the, and it's www.bookoftop10, the number 10, horrorlists.com. Send us a message. We'll definitely get you a book. If you want to come with me to Transylvania, we do the Dracula tours every year. www.dractours.com.
And when is that this year?
It's every Halloween. It's October 27th through November 3rd. Once in a while, we'll do a summer version for people who are in the haunt business or the Halloween business who can't go, or, you know, students and teachers. And if you're on the East Coast or if you want to travel, Paracon 2, July 16th through the 17th in Ansonia, Connecticut. And you can go to www.paracon, but it's two N's because it's in Connecticut, paracon.org. And I have a ton of other things to promote, but we'll save the rest for the next
show. Be the amazing Kreskin while you can. And were you just about to give me a website or?
Well, I was just going to say that the next book that we're doing, that I'm doing, is True Ghosts, True Ghost Stories of Connecticut. It'll be out by the time we do another interview. Hopefully, I'd love to be on again. And we
can. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I didn't know Connecticut was so haunted, but we'll save that for next time. Charles, thank you so much for coming on. And Nicole and your pigtails and Trouble, who popped in and out, always good to see you. Tell everybody about how they can follow you and how they can get your book.
So you can find me at Nicole6Books on Instagram and Nicole H6 on Facebook. And right now my newest book, Slow Burn, is out on lulu.com, lulu.com. And just Google Nicole6.
And I'm Goth Comedian, all social media. Everybody have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye.